Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 78 for February 19th, 2008. The Mac Snobs. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the Tuesday edition. The Tuesday right before Apple decides what it's going to do today edition. We've got a great cast with us, starting with Alex Lindsay from pixelcore.com. Hello, Alex.
Hello, hello.
Also around the table, Merlin Mann of 43folders.com.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Merlin. And Chris Breen is here from the Mac. He's the Mac Daddy from Mac 911 at Macworld Magazine.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
How's the hair?
The hair is great.
I understand Merlin used your hair in a presentation.
Yeah, yeah, he did, but I've updated the hair now. It has been dethatched.
You have to do that every few years so the oxygen can actually get to the roots, I understand.
Actually, with my hair, it's every 3 months.
The ironic part is if you trim it, it actually grows faster. So
yeah, it does, yeah.
There's a guy who comes around with a little hole poker, right, and he pokes holes in the thatch just to let it out and breathe.
Well, it's like one of those lawn aerators, you know, yeah, where you sort of stand on it and then, you know, jump up and down on it and you get those little cores that come out. Yeah, and that's my skill.
That's pleasant. You could probably mine that and sell it to people, hairless people.
Well, I have done that, but I'm kind of working on it in fourth world countries before I release it here.
Hair plugs for the poor. I think that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, doctors, it'd be frontier sans hair plugs. Medecin sans...
Brain plugs sans frontier.
There you go. That's it. Yeah. I think we found it. I think we found Chris's new métier. We're going to do the whole show in French now.
Oui, maybe en sûr.
I think that was it. That was our French. Let's see. This week, any news at all? Anything? Nothing.
Yes. Oh. There have been new things.
There have been new things.
I've heard of new things. Number one is... this is more on the tech end, but Apple has released the new XAN. So that's people that
I don't know if we should lead with that exactly.
Well, I mean, it was new. You were saying, was there anything new that's new in the Mac
world?
They're
not going to NAB. Is that a big deal?
You know, I don't really think it is. I think that I have to say that you have to look at the cost of NAB. I think a lot of people get concerned about this, that Apple's not going to be at NAB. Avid, by the way, is also not going to be at NAB. And one of the things that you have to understand is that the cost is, you know, in the millions of dollars. When you look at the size of their booth, and we went through the pain of having a little booth. We had a booth that was only 20 by 10, and it, you know, nearly broke us. You know, and so this is a huge 100 by 100 booth or something like that, and it's... and then you have to bring all those people in and put them up at NAB price, you know, whatever the price is in Vegas to put, you know, 100 people up. You also have all the union costs of putting up the actual booth, all the, you know, shipping, everything else. You're talking about millions of dollars. You're talking about probably something that rivals the engineering cost of the Pro Apps, which are going to be promoted there.
Really?
Per year.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
probably,
yeah, it's that, you know, much.
It really is numbers like that, you know, and I don't know exactly what either number is, but my guess is that it's not, they're pretty close to each other. I'd rather see more features myself. You know, I think that. The other thing is if you took all the money that, and I'm not saying Apple's going to do this, but we had this discussion when Avid dropped out, is that if you took all the money that Apple saves by not going to NAB, they could do a roadshow and spend $50,000 to $100,000 per city in all the major cities in the United States and still come out even and have a far bigger impact on their actual market than they will, or in a far better return than anything they're going to do on the floor of NAB.
It's really, though, an indictment of NAB more than it is. Because, I mean, you got a market. I mean, you could say the same thing. Well, if Apple didn't buy any ads, they could put more money into Leopard, but you need to market.
I think it's an indictment on conventions.
Yes.
You know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, you just really have to have something, a convention. The reason we see, I think, so many things about the iPod, for instance, at Macworld, is because that pays off. Because you have a lot of people, it's a cheap product, and you can just buy it real quick. You know,
and you got a lot of people who are press people who are going to come in and write about it. So there's an economy of scale to getting all those people in one place. It matters. I mean, these things matter. If you're in a business that has a huge amount of networking that's very costly and you're all going to be in Las Vegas at the same time, I think that's one reason conferences succeed, is because a lot of powerful people agree to be in the same place at the same
time. Well, NAB is that for broadcasting, for sure.
And I'm sure it's a networking opportunity for people who
are
talented.
If you're in NAB, yeah. Well, TV, it's more engineers. TV and radio engineers, that's what.
I'd say it's a great networking opportunity, but you have to ask yourself, is there other ways to do the networking? You know, for instance, I mean, I don't know how you would do this in the technology area, but when I went to TED Global, you know, now there is a that's an event that is a that is designed for networking. It's designed for everyone to meet everyone else. And, you know, it's far more efficient. I met more people in more countries than I think ever in my entire life. And everyone's there to network. They know that they're there to talk to each other. They're there to find out about what the other one's doing. And the question is this all grew. I mean, you know, this all grew from little tables to these huge one-upmanship. And I think a lot of the folks at the top of that one-upmanship are starting to go, you know, this is getting out of hand.
Interesting.
My concern about this whole NAB thing is that the reason that Apple claims it's doing this, and this is sort of a meme that they've been putting out for a long time now, is that they say, you know, we don't need to do conventions because we've got a convention every single day at the Apple store and everybody can come by and see our stuff.
Oh, interesting.
And they've been floating this around for a while. So, okay, fine. They're pulling this for NAB. We're not going to go to NAB because you can see us at our Apple stores. And of course you can't get that kind of experience there, but that's what they're floating around. So how far will they take this? Will they eventually say, you know, we don't need to do Expo because we can call an event when we need something to happen and everybody's going to come because you do, that's what you guys do. And you can go to the Apple store.
I think Expo is the one thing you keep though.
I would think so, but it does make me a little nervous when they kind of keep saying, we have expos every day at our Apple stores.
Right. This is a trend that this industry has been watching for years, because my main, if you call it a job, in the 90s was making websites for things like PC Expo and stuff like that. And even then, they were incredibly nervous about online anything. I mean, obviously they wouldn't have a website up, you know, for marketing reasons, but they were very concerned even then of what the internet did to the whole idea of both the expo and the conference. And I think that's, you take that, which I think is a very real concern. It was then, and it's even more real now. And then you add to that that I think the very important discussion that people are having about the environmental impact of a conference. I'm no tree hugger, but man, you think about all the crap. I mean, just think about all the people who fly into that, all the resources that go into that. I mean, let alone all the brochures that get thrown away and the swag bags that people leave in their hotel room. I mean, there's just something that, you know, part of what makes the internet is the economy, again, to use that phrase, economy of scale. There's something extremely efficient about being able to get that information out over the internet. And then second, in a very kind of George Bush administration way, to Chris's point, you get to control the message when it's your event. When you go out there and
Macworld is their event though, right? I mean, they don't.
That's
why you keep Macworld.
But I mean, you know, if Apple goes away from Mac Expo, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine how you could have much of a show without them there, don't you think? The Steve note alone draws much of the attention to that event.
No, that would.
Yeah, you just think of Boston and what happened there when Apple pulled out.
Boom, gone.
I think it'd be highly unlikely that Apple would drop out of Macworld. I think that's the one. I think it does benefit them.
It's such an old-fashioned event. It's such a weirdly like 1970s way to conduct business, to have an event like that. If you, I mean, just the if you think about how many thousands of people flew on a plane to go stand in a room so they could watch someone talk.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
on the other hand, you look at conferences like South by Southwest and they're thriving.
Well, it's because people drink.
I think the difference is conference versus expo. That when it is about people getting together and conferring.
Yes. And I'll tell you the same thing. Which is that everything, and this is true for me, I mean, with the possible exception of eTech, you know, back in the day.
That's the O'Reilly Emerging Technology,
which is a, you know, it's gotten a little bit, you know, biz dev over the years. But man, when eTech first came out, like every panel I went to or everything was great. But anyway, all conferences, it's all about the hallways. Everybody knows that. Yeah. And so it's a contrivance. It's a glass to put the water in, you know, to have a conference. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Well, maybe there'll be Macworld Conference instead of Macworld Expo. And I mean, certainly they already have that with WWDC, and they're never going to stop doing that either, are they?
You know,
marketer Steve Rebell pointed out that Apple has been on Twitter, Apple has been releasing something new every Tuesday. He says it's gone on for 52 weeks. I don't know if he's counting or being facetious. And I don't know if it has anything to do with the Mac Break weekly release date. But I just keep waiting for Apple to call. I'm going to turn on the ringer. They did call right after the show last week. Did you know that? Uh-huh. I sent a note out. They called and they said, do you want to see the MacBook Air? I don't know if they're listening or what. So I have an Air in my hand.
I have an Air in my hand too. No, I'm not working blue, Leo. I've got an Air. Yeah.
You did? A review Air? Or did you buy one?
It was
given to you. That's
it
what
was
I thought.
Given to me, and it's absolutely extraordinary.
You know, there's a lot to be said about it. I still wouldn't probably recommend it. It's one of those things that if you don't know you want one, don't get one.
I don't think I've ever had such conflicting feelings about a computer. I mean, as much as I kind of rag the whole iPhone buzz thing, I've never disputed that. I don't think that the iPhone that you hold in your hand is anything but like an amazing piece of work for the ages. This thing is like, man, you talk about trade-offs. This would actually be a good topic probably at some point, but you talk about trade-offs, man.
You give up a lot.
You totally give up a lot. I mean, like trying to migrate through the Air. I mean, I finally got smart and plugged in a direct Ethernet cable between the two boxes. But wow, once you're set up, it's like any of this stuff, I guess. Once you're set up, I'm sure it'll be fine. But it's all about the trade-offs. And I don't know. I can see like 80% of people just who have held it going, okay, this is a piece of industrial design like I have never seen. Mm-hmm. And I could still see 20% of people going, you've got to be kidding me. This is like the biggest joke ever.
I think that the weird thing for me is it doesn't feel like there's a computer anywhere in there. It's like if you opened a clipboard and started typing on it.
It's a
like,
monitor with a latch.
The computer must be somewhere in the fourth dimension. And that's the strangest thing. And I think it is going to, in this regard, this is a significant product because you're kind of seeing the future here where the computer kind of goes away. I mean, Apple's been trying that with the iMac. But as miniaturization gets better and better, where's the computer? There's no computer here. That's barely thick enough for the keyboard and a screen. It's a strange feeling, especially when you're computing in your lap. I agree.
Because it's barely there at all. And I mean, I've talked ad nauseum about my wife's, the 12-inch PowerBook she's got that I adore. And this thing, I threw it on a scale this morning and it was, according to our kitchen scale, it was 2 pounds, 15.8 ounces, you cannot underscore this enough. We say this about every Apple product, but invariably it becomes truer with every Apple product. You can't even get this until you actually hold it in your hand. I guess Chris can probably underscore this.
You've played with one, right, Chris?
Yeah, I have. And I feel there are too many trade-offs for me to run out and purchase one.
Me too.
But you're right. I mean, when I picked one up and went, huh, wow, this is beautiful. You know, and you just sort of want to stroke it and open it up and go, wow. But, you know, when I sort of step away and I give myself about 3 days to walk away from it and just think about it, I really just can't justify buying one because I need much more from my laptop.
Yeah. I keep thinking, oh, I really want to buy this, exactly that. And then I look at the MacBook which I bought in lieu of it, and it's got all this storage, and it's got DVD burner, and the screen. You know, compare the size of the screen and the keyboard; they're almost identical. I mean, I don't think there's that much difference. The LED screen does not knock me out to the point where I'd say I have to have that. It's really about the thinness, the lightness, and the MacBook is 2 pounds heavier. Come on,
yeah,
2 pounds,
yeah.
No, totally. But I mean, to the point, I mean, I risk kind of putting off the Apple true believers here. But I think something is true about a Mac buyer. And I've said this before, but I really, people who buy Macs, at least in the past, and I think to an extent still now, are buying on a certain idea of quality and design and usability. And they're willing to pay a little bit more for something that they think is exquisite, right? Like you can buy a watch, you know, out of a gumball machine that'll keep time. But a lot of people want a watch that, well, you know, looks good and conveys status or what have you. But this thing, the build quality on this thing is out of control. Like if they had half-assed this, I would not be as excited as I am, right? If this thing did not feel, if it did not have the sense of being completely finished in terms of the design component, it would be no question. It's useless. You know, it's just, but how amazing is it that a company could go and make something like this with this many trade-offs at a point when they're competing with PC companies that are throwing as much power as they can to try and sell machines, that they can go out and sell this exquisite object that's...
Well, it's interesting because Lenovo is making an X300 that will also fit in a manila envelope, as Walt Mossberg pointed out. It doesn't have anywhere near the wow factor, though. It's thin. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and you're echoing something. David Hanemeyer Hansen, the guy who created Ruby on Rails and works with 37 Signals, wrote this in his blog, that the fit and finish of this is dramatically higher even than other Macintoshes. And I have to agree, when I look at my MacBook, it's a little, you know, the plastic's a little rattly. You know, it's fine. I can live with it. My last one was like that, too. This thing is like a BMW. I mean, it's...
Did you see David Galbraith's post on the MacBook Air? I'm trying to pull it up quickly, but he was, and I forget who this is via. I'm sure it's probably Gruber or that article.
Gruber wrote a long article also.
He wrote a really good long article. Yeah. It's worth reading. But he's talking here about how everybody's whining about it being underpowered, but then goes out and compares it to the original Pentium.
Right.
And he says,
what's
the example that he uses? You would need 600 Pentium-based computers in an office the size of a hangar to equal the processing power of a single MacBook Air. Well, I don't have any way to check that.
And Chris, even in Macworld's benchmarks, you point out that your base machine, which is a G4 PowerBook, is much slower than the Air. Even though the Air is the slowest Intel Mac out there.
Yeah, and it has so much to do with the way you compute. And one reason I don't have it is because most of my resources aren't online. If I were doing a bunch of stuff, a bunch of work over the internet, if I was using Google Docs for everything, it would make sense. And maybe I'll get there in the next year or two. But right now, I do everything locally, and I need the kind of speed and power that I get from my MacBook Pro and not from this machine. But that is going to change.
I think, you know, this is a terrible analogy probably, but I mean, when I was a kid, we not only didn't have a color TV, because TV was kind of frowned on in my house as much as you'd never know that to look at me today, but we had a little crappy black and white TV.
How do you know all this pop culture crap then? Were you sneaking the TV?
No, I watched it. She would cut the cord off. My mom would cut the cord off every week or two.
But I still
saw every episode of Happy Days.
I'm
going
to say, you seem to know a lot about the TV.
But think about it this way. Think about, like, when did color TV? There was a great infographic on the New York Times in the last week or two showing the adoption rate of different technologies. And talking about how, for example, with television, you look at how color TV had a pretty quick uptake from when it became incredibly expensive in, what, the early 60s to becoming, it tipped pretty quickly. But then think about how quickly you started to see TVs in different rooms of the house. And I know this is an incredibly obvious example, but like, yeah, sure. The one that's going to sit in your living room or today your media center, if you're a dork, is like, you're going to get the nicest TV you can afford if your family sits around and watches TV. But you understand that if you want a TV that's going to be in your kitchen and not be cumbersome, it can't have the same form factor as the one in your living room.
I think that's kind of the opposite with the MacBook. The one I put in the living room that I watch TV with.
Well, in that case, but you see my point.
No, though. It's exactly your point. And the kitchen has the iMac, has the more robust computer.
Nobody would ever go, oh God, if I can't have a 30-inch screen in my kitchen, why would I even want to have a TV? Well, you know, you understand there's a trade-off. And I think that's, as this becomes more of a consumer device and it becomes something where, again, Apple users are probably willing to spend more money on stuff like this. For me, this is totally going to be like a living room, bedroom computer. It's not going to be what I like work on.
I think we all agree then basically that this is a remarkable computer. There are trade-offs. We wouldn't say go out and get it to anybody, but if somebody can see the value of it, that it's a worthwhile thing to get.
Let me ask, it's not slow.
It doesn't feel slow.
Oh, it's very peppy. Totally peppy. Okay, let me ask you this. Here's what I was thinking about. As I sat there watching 16 hours and some minutes as my estimated migration time on air, Yeah, nice. Well, first of all, also, I did like, I guess it was Jason Snell. Like Jason, I went in and did a huge amount of house cleaning before I did this. But my question to you is, would you recommend a MacBook Air to somebody who's switching?
No, absolutely not. I'd recommend a MacBook.
What do you think, Chris?
No, I agree. I wouldn't recommend it. No, I think people would find too many obstacles and they'd say, oh, if this is what the Mac experience is like, forget it.
I'd say MacBook. I'd say MacBook Prime.
MacBook. It would be easy. Yeah. MacBook is a no-brainer. Yeah. This is a second computer. I don't think this would ever be a first computer unless you're an executive, unless you're somebody who isn't a computer person.
I think I think if you're not using graphics, if you're not doing anything heavy, I mean, I think that when I look at my wife mostly is spending time in Excel and Word and those types of things, and for her, it would be nice and small. It's something she can just kind of put in a pack, and it's perfect for her because she never. I mean, I looked at her; she was asking how to migrate her files this morning, and how to move her files from one computer to another. We're looking to get in a new one, and all of her files that she's accumulated over the last. Except for music and movies, that she's downloaded on iTunes, all of her files that she's accumulated are like 365 megabytes. I was like, well, we can just put that on a flash drive. It's not, that's, and so for a person that's doing that kind of stuff, that are surfing the web, they're using email, they're writing stuff or doing Excel files or whatever, I think this is a perfect machine. It's not taking any extra data that any extra room, more room than it has to. It looks cool. And it is, it's very, very functional. It's very fast. You can do all the little entertainment things as well. I couldn't use it because I can't.
You can't edit video on it, and you can't do photo. You could do Photoshop.
Although, actually, I actually talked to, there's a Pixelworks member, John Flowers, who was in, who he bought one for himself and his girlfriend. And he said he's editing fine on his Air. Final Cut's going to run. A lot of this stuff, especially when you're just doing editing, motion is the thing that's going to really bog down. But Final Cut actually is not very graphics, intensive. It's not really putting a lot of push on the processor. So it actually, he's editing just fine. On it. Now I'm sure that he's working on smaller files than what we do. But I think that there's a, I think that for a lot of people, I know that I'd love to have one. As a second computer or as a travel computer that I'm just going to go somewhere for the day or two or three or whatever, and I don't really need to do any heavy processing. When you pick it up and hold it and move it around, I wish I could do the work on this one. And I don't miss, I don't, I would buy the drive. I would buy the drive. I mean, I wouldn't try to be doing anything over the
I wouldn't
board.
Buy, you mean the
it's
SSD? External drive. Yeah.
No, the external drive. I just buy the drive. I mean, people complain about the drive. I'm just like, I just buy the drive.
I haven't tried it. I have a cheap third-party USB CD. I haven't tried it, or DVD player. I haven't tried it yet, but I imagine it would work. Chris, did they test that in the lab at all?
They tested the drive that you purchased for it, and it doesn't work with others, so...
Oh. So I won't be able to use that third-party drive.
Well, no, you may be able to use the third-party drive with it, but if you purchase the Apple drive...
It doesn't work with other computers?
Yeah, because it requires it requires a certain amount of extra oomph in the power department.
Really?
I believe that's the case.
How interesting.
If you get a call from Apple after this saying, no, he's wrong, it works the other way. Then no.
Oh, how interesting.
I think it's safe to assume with almost anything with this box that your expectations need to be part of owning this thing. As I'm realizing, for example, I was excited. I was like, oh great, I'm going to have another MagSafe, because I use several MagSafes so I can move around the house without having to worry about it. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I'll be able to use the MagSafe. No, it's got its own different wattage MagSafe. It's like everything about this. It's a total.
Oh, the
diva.
Connector is a no.
Yeah.
You can't. It's different wattage, but you can. Fit the other one in it. I don't know what's going to happen, but I was
kidding. In that little tiny thing.
Yeah.
That thing pulls out super easy in my experience.
I was able to, I didn't try the Air's connector on my other computers, but I was able to charge the Air. Apple's probably also going to give me a ring on this with the power supply from the MacBook Pro.
As soon as we're done, they're going to announce that you just voided your warranty.
Well, I didn't buy it. This is going back in three weeks. It's a 65 watt. It's a small power supply. It's the little one, 65 watt. I have to say, if there is one big negative, it is the length of time it takes to charge it and the sad battery life it seems to give.
Oh, really?
It's about 4 hours. It's why they say five when they know perfectly well it's not five. And it's not just Apple. Every company in the world does this.
I wish they would just come up with one lie that everybody agreed on. If everybody could just say, here is the time that you can expect doing something normal plus 20%, that would be fine. As long as we all knew how much to discount. It's just that,
it's never the amount of time, though, is it? I mean, does anybody get 5 hours? No.
Yeah, I really think they must be getting this. I think Macworld actually has joked about this before, but I think they derive this time by basically opening a file with nothing running, and then seeing how long it takes till the battery dies.
Yeah,
that's
turn
fine.
Off
that's
airport, not turn off Bluetooth, turn off every possible brain, power drain, and then don't touch it. Whatever you do.
Now, Leo, how many times have you charged and discharged the thing?
Two or three.
Yeah, because apparently the first charge is not good, and then it gets better. over time.
In terms of how long it takes?
Yeah. So the first charge can take like 8 hours.
It did. It took a really long time. But
Yeah. But it gets better, supposedly.
It gets better. Okay. The battery softens up.
Yeah, exactly.
It's right. So, okay.
I've been massaged and now it's, okay.
I'll retract it. If it got 5 hours, I think that would be pretty compelling. But, and you know, it's saying 4 right now, fully charged. But I know it really is more like 3.5.
What is yeah, that? And with laptops, that's the case. With iPods, it's not.
Right.
Is the battery removable?
No. Not in any way.
It's embedded, right?
Although somebody told me that even though there's 12 screws to open this thing up, once you open it up, it actually is fairly, it's fairly easy to get around inside. It's not like a MacBook where everything goes boing and you can't get it back together again.
Yeah, I really don't want to talk about that.
Boing.
You realize how tight the tolerance is on the engineering arm when you try to take anything by Apple apart.
Well, it's like when I was a kid and I would take apart watches, you know, and you never get it back together. There's always one big spring that you don't know where you say everything's in there, but there's this spring left over. I can't understand.
Oh, just for the second hand, who needs that?
Who needs that? So it turns out Mac owners are, in fact, snobs. Now, this is according to a study.
Is that a surprise?
It's according to a study by Mindset Media that I am not going to buy because it's like $400. I really want to buy it. It's, you know, it's one of those companies that gives advertisers research as to the psychographics of a target market. And they did it on Apple owners. Fortunately, the Street, the website, made a video based on the contents of it. And if I may extract from the video, Mac owners are more likely to be perfectionists, to use notebooks, to use teeth whitening products. Show of hands, how many of you have used teeth whitening products?
I look like a Dickens character. I know.
We call him Snaggletooth Man.
I use a hair whitening.
Now sponsored by Colgate.
Colgate whitening strips? You use those?
I'm saying MacBreak. We can.
We should be. That's the point of studies like this. Is absolutely Colgate's looking at this and saying, we need to find some venue where we could reach. Where could we advertise inexpensively to reach a large number of Macintosh owners?
Where can we go to find somebody with extra money who doesn't care about their personal appearance?
Yeah.
I think we found your venue.
Mac owners are also more likely to drive station wagons, to pay for downloaded music, yeah, because they use iTunes, to go to Starbucks, yeah, because they use iTunes, to care about green products and the environment, well, yeah. To own a hybrid car. How many Priuses in the audience here today?
Oh, you guys own cars?
you're a small side branch of the Macintosh.
Well, Leo, actually, I have an oak tree that fell naturally that I put some wheels on. And I do a Flintstone-style method of locomotion that requires actually no carbon credits at all.
I have to use a car. I rent a car. For a short period of time.
That's right. You don't own a car. That's right. And last but not least, and I don't know where they got this, Mac owners tend to buy 5 or more pairs of sneakers a year.
Whoa. That's a lot of sneakers.
That sounds made up to me.
No, you know what that comes from, and you guys wouldn't know about this, people who run.
Well, huh? On purpose?
Run, not from the law.
you mean not just from bullies?
Not from bullies, not for a streetcar, but people who run for exercise through shoes.
I had not heard of that. That is new to me.
I'm sorry, I was eating Cheetos. I don't think that's on the list.
Many Mac users are also incredibly distracted and enjoy a snack.
Now my air is all orange. So I don't know what to say about this. We are snobs. I think that this is obvious.
Do you think this is changing, though? I mean, like, if you're like me and you made it through the hard days when it really did kind of suck to be a Mac user, I wonder, I have to ask myself sometimes how much baggage I carry around about that stuff and really looking at how many people are using some kind of Apple product. Do you think that kind of stuff holds up?
I think it's less true, but remember, we're still a small percentage. We're not even in double digits of the overall computer market. So we're still, it's still a minority.
But it's like trying to compare, like, I don't know, how do you say? I was like trying to compare like the entire behavior of the population of the United States to people who like Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. I mean, it's not even, how can you even make a comparison?
Well, if you're an advertiser, you care.
Yeah, I suppose. It sounds like some of that sounds like BS.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, and remember, we're not including iPods in here. This is Mac owners.
Okay, yeah.
All right. I'd like to throw this out to the panel. Now, how often when you meet somebody who really doesn't know what you do and you tell them, yeah, I'm a Mac user and I do such and such in the business, and these are people that are PC users, do you immediately see sort of a flinch reaction from them? Like you're about to give them the spiel and give them a pamphlet?
I get the reaction like I tell them I'm working at Amnesty International or something, because they always go, I should do that.
Exactly. Like, yes. That's it.
That's what I get.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, oh man, I would love, you know, actually my brother has a Mac and I love it, but you know, I got to use a PC at work and I don't know. It'd be such a pain.
Because they know that you're just about to hit them up.
They're trying to put you off.
Like asking
they are. They're like, no, please don't start the spiel. Yes, I'll go to church more often, I swear.
It's like meeting the minister. Same way.
Like Ron Paul supporters or something.
Ron Paul? Yeah.
Or for that matter, Obama.
What I find interesting is the camaraderie with other Mac users. I mean, if I'm sitting at an airport, the person that's going to come and talk to me is another Mac user.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're going to be, you know, hey, man, can I, you know, and they'll ask me something about my Mac or whether I like the new, like, they'll assume that I know the new, whatever the new news is, you know, and talk about it on, you know, much more readily. I mean, no one ever talks to me who uses a PC, like at an airport or at a cafe or whatever, but everyone's got a question. Oh, I can't figure this out. And there's kind of this thing. And I find myself interested, you know, like if I'm going to ask someone for directions or ask someone something at a coffee shop, I'm much more likely to walk up to someone that's kind of in the club. And it's, but I find that just kind of an interesting, psychological process.
I'm sure some sociologist or anthropologist has done a study on group identification memes, and that this is just like that. You know, you see somebody wearing, I don't know, a puka shell necklace, and you know who they are. You see somebody carrying a Mac, you know who they are. You go on one of these Mac cruises, it's really fun because it's a bunch of Mac people.
I was anxious to go get this thing because I knew it was sitting in South City. So I went down there to pick it up at FedEx. And I mean, I had an experience that I just can't imagine having happened a couple years ago, which is I walk in, I give him my name. He brings out a box. He goes, oh, hey, I don't think he even saw the Apple whatever on it. He just goes, hey, new laptop. And I go, yeah. He goes, what kind? And I go, it's an Apple. He goes, oh, new MacBook Air. those look really pretty. And I mean, like, okay, sure, maybe the guy's a Mac fan, but that would have never happened, like, even a few years ago.
That's really funny.
I was like, wow, yeah.
I often wonder what the FedEx and the UPS guys think of, you know, my house, since all this stuff is constantly arriving in shifts, practically. It's worse at Dvorak's. I remember going to Dvorak's. There was literally a human-sized tower of UPS boxes that had just been delivered. Unbelievable. Well, okay, so we're going to cop to this. We're perfectionists. We're snobs. We use teeth whitening products, some of us. We go to Starbucks. We care about green. Many of us own hybrid cars. How many sneakers a year do you go through?
So basically you're saying we're insufferable.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think about it, isn't that Justin Long's character?
He seems pretty mellow.
He's a perfectionist. He has white teeth. Yeah. I bet he drives a Prius.
Totally.
Of course he does. And he was wearing sneakers.
The Segway that Waz rides, is that how does that score environmentally? Oh, that's got to be pretty good.
Yeah, very high. Sure, sure, sure. Well, you know, I mean, come on, you plug it in. Then we all know electric power is clean.
That's clean coal.
Made with clean coal. Let's see, what else? I know there were some other stories. There's some other big stories.
The new Shuffle is now $49.
$49 buckaroos! Now, is this a different Shuffle, or did you just lower the price?
No. They added a 2 gig is $69 and the 1 gig is $49.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
But now I really miss the USB connector because I'd love to have that act as a key drive too.
You can't,
but you still have to carry the docks.
You can't do it.
Yeah. Trade-offs.
Yeah.
Trade-offs.
Yeah. It is an amazing thing when you look at what Apple's done though, is there is no Air in that market. I mean, it's from the time you want to spend $10 all the way up to $100.
Well, and they're smart because that's probably a lot closer to their actual cost. I mean, come on.
Right.
These things are cheap.
It's a little piece of metal.
Right. There's not much memory in it. It's a gig. People are starting to line up for the Apple TV, the 160 gig. I hear a lot of my friends who didn't buy Apple TV buying them. Clearly, that product has now got some life in it, thanks to Apple TV 2. We still love it. We still happy.
Yes.
Yeah, I still want to. I want to come back. Not now necessarily, but I want to round back around to this whole rental 24-hour issue because I've rented 3 movies and I have not been able to finish any of them.
That's really annoying.
It's really, really annoying. Even 36 hours would be just plain stupid. I mean, 72 hours would be what they should do.
You just got to watch the damn thing, though, Merlin. Come on.
Pause it and come back whenever you want.
Right. As long as you pause it. But then you can't do anything else.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. I like Mean Girls. I have to admit, Mean Girls, but I didn't have time.
I was going to rent Sunshine and like 2 days ago, and I looked at it and literally thought, am I really going to finish this tonight? And I wasn't sure whether I was going to finish it tonight, and I just didn't rent it.
I was in a hotel room, and I'm looking at the $13 lousy image movie on my hotel, and I'm looking, and I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, I can rent a movie on iTunes, and I did, for $4, and I watched it within 24 hours. I mean, if you're in a hotel, that's a pretty good thing. That's a lot cheaper.
I think it works. I just think it would work a lot better at 72 hours. That's all. I just think it'd be much. I mean, I'd be renting like a crazy man.
We know now that Apple listens about. We know now that Apple listens because they fixed the stack and they fixed the menu bar in Leopard. So I think we could count on them to fix that. Chris Breen, I don't think we've heard from you, Chris Breen, since maybe we have, since you had time to play with this thing. No, I don't think we have. Tell us about your impression of the Apple TV 2.
I am very impressed by the thing. I agree with you on the rental limit. 24 hours is a little is under what we should be getting. But again, you can pause the thing and come back to it whenever you want. I really am very impressed by the picture quality of the HD stuff and even the standard def stuff. I have never had a problem with. I think it's perfectly fine. And it downloads really quickly.
Merlin rented, what did you rent that you, Dr. Zhivago, you said?
You know what it was? I mean, there's a part of me, like, I think they used the original trailers. Like, the Dr. Zhivago trailer looks like I think I said on Twitter, it looks like David Lean's cat used it as a scratching post. But the stuff I've gotten I've been buying all HD, because it does look really, really good.
I got Altered States HD, and I was pretty impressed.
I've gotten Transformers, Mean Girls, and one other movie. And Transformers, which is a terrible, terrible movie.
with it's great fun. Effects. It's a fun movie, though.
It looked great. Yeah, it looked fantastic.
Yeah. And that's a movie that... Actually, I wanted to bring this up with you, Alex, because you probably know more about this than anybody else. George Wu, writing in ZDNet blogs, he does the Real World IT column and usually focuses on security. So he's not a video expert, but he's talking. He says, I mean, the title of the article is Don't Believe the Low Bitrate HD Lie. And it's relevant now because with HD DVD dead, Blu-ray looking like the future of high def discs, but also challenged by all these services, Apple, Microsoft and others offering high def downloads. He says, you know, when you're looking at bit rates on H.264 of 1.5 to 4 megabits at 720p, that's not high def. I mean, it's technically 720p, but is it being overcompressed?
Yeah. I mean, it's being crushed. I mean, the question really gets back to whether, number one, is the movie itself, and number two is what's good enough? You know, so the thing to it's absolutely being overcompressed. They are doing the best they can to get a high quality video out at 30 gigs for Blu-ray.
So is it unfair? You could see it on Blu-ray, but I mean, I'm saying, is it unfair for is it unfair for somebody like Apple to say high def downloads when these things are so much worse than true high def?
Resolution is how people are defining high def. They're not doing high quality. They're not saying it's high quality video. They're saying it's high def, high definition.
It is technically 720p or 1080i, but don't people assume high def means high quality?
Well, it looks better than standard def.
Does it?
It is sharper than standard. Now, here's the deal. Here's what you give up, and I'm going to ruin everybody's viewing experience. Scott, who's not on here, had the misfortune of me walking in and looking on his HD monitor while he's watching cable. Because you've got to remember, cable is mashing what you're watching as well.
Heavily badly, impressed
far right, worse than, right. than Blu-ray. Not probably better than what you're seeing from Apple TV, but they're really whacking it, you know, to get it onto your cable input. So when they say, you know, digitally enhanced or whatever, that means they crush the bejeebers out of it, you know? And so what you're going to see, and this you'll see this if you're watching HD cable as well as if you watch Apple TV, is you're going to see blocks. And these blocks, these macro blocks, are colors. When the colors get close together, when you got a bunch of blacks that are, for instance, getting close together on a dark shot or smoke or a big green wall, what you're going to start noticing water. Along those edges and in the middle. And with water, you're going to see these big... And here's the other place you're going to notice it is when the camera moves a lot. So a Bourne identity tends to fall apart much faster, or a Bourne supremacy tends to fall apart much faster than Kundun. And the reason is that Kundun doesn't, you know, Scorsese doesn't move the camera very much. You know, he likes he likes everything to unfold. And that means that not too much is the compressor doesn't have to change too much in the image. When you start hand holding it and moving stuff around all the time, that puts a lot more pressure on it because it has a hard limit on what the bandwidth can be. And so what happens is the image actually starts to fall apart.
Here's what Ooze says. He says, standard definition DVDs are 5 to 8 megabits, MPEG 2. He says you just can't compare that to 1.5 to 4. 4 is the top bit rate of the Apple TV 2. 1.5 to 4 megabits of 720p H.264. He says Apple and Microsoft should not use the HD name with video that's lower fidelity than a standard DVD.
Well, I think that everybody has been defining it. That would be changing the rules in some respects. I do agree that they can call it HD. I'm not totally convinced that I'm really getting that much of a better image on my 36-inch HD monitor. Once I start getting larger, maybe I notice the sharpness, maybe I don't.
I think it's actually the other way around. I think you're not going to see the defects nearly as well on a small monitor. As soon as you get to a big monitor, you really can see all the
defects. I think you will, because you'll see those macro blocks pretty quickly. You know,
what
I mean by that, though. Sorry.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And anybody who's seen digitally compressed video knows exactly
notice
what
it.
About.
You know when you see it. I mean, there was a movie I was watching not long ago, and this is my back pocket description of what looks bad is anytime too much is happening at once. And to me, that could be, as you say, things are blowing around, smoke, you definitely see it with anything involving running water. But, you know, you can just see these, the artifacts are crazy. I mean, it looks like a 20% JPEG is on screen.
Right. Or anything that is a night scene or dark, or there's a lot of movies now have, you know, big black spots, and you really can see it in there because they just can't handle it.
Yeah, so I don't think it's inappropriate to call it HD. I think they are providing that quality. I do think there's a good argument that we really should be aiming a little higher. You know, and as a user, I don't need it to start up immediately. You know, I'd rather have 3 days to watch it and be able, and say I want to watch it and then go about my business for a little while, let it cash up or whatever.
What are your download experiences in terms of time for a high def movie? Chris Breen, you said it was pretty fast.
It depends on the kind of bandwidth you've got, but I've got about 4 megabits coming down. It takes about 10 to 12 minutes before you can start watching it. A little notice
so
pops
you're
up
able to even start a high def movie.
Yeah, no, you can a standard def, you can start in under a minute.
Yeah, it's real fast. But same for me, Chris, on Comcast.
You'd have to have enough bandwidth so that you could download it in real time, though, or will not stream. In other words, if you can't download it in 2 hours for a 2-hour movie, it's not going
to. Yeah, what it'll do is it'll cache up to about 10 to 11%, and then it will say, "Okay, I'm ready to go."
Right, but again, it has to be fast enough. So if we're talking 1.5 megabits for the bottom side of HD, if your connection is 1.5 megabits, you're not going to be able to stream that.
No, you're going to have to wait. They've got a little table on Apple's site that says, you know, wait 8 hours or something if you've got 768K down or something.
And I think that the one thing that we want to think about in a land where Netflix, you know, rules large sections of our experience is that a lot of times we're willing to put something in a queue and say we want to watch it or put a bunch of stuff in a queue and watch those things. I don't really have a problem deciding on there's a handful of movies that I want to watch these next 4 movies over the next whatever and have them or this, you know, I don't necessarily want to do one movie, but I want to have a choice between these next 3 or 4 movies, but I don't need them until the next couple of days, you know, and if it just in the background was sucking up the amount of time, the data that I needed, I don't need to necessarily watch something right when I click on it. I still think that a lot of times when we're developing these technologies, we're missing the point that the only thing you need to see live is news and sports. You know, and I think that TV vastly overestimates the need to have that click through and be able to watch it immediately. I mean, we get TiVo so that we don't have to do that.
Yeah, but you guys aren't there yet, but you will be in a few years. And that's the four-year-old factor. And that's when your four-year-old is sitting on the couch with you and says, Daddy,
I want to watch Bugs.
I want to watch something now. And you go, oh, okay. Oh, good. Here is Hercules. That will be great. And, oh, honey, can I give you something else to do for the next 10 minutes?
I've gone
Yeah, but that's a collection. That's that. I mean, when I grew up, I don't know. That was a very large DVD collection. Or VHS.
I think what you're describing is absolutely doable, Alex. I think it's just a change in attitude. I think once, for example, like can you think about your, I don't know how many of you guys are TiVo or DVR users. Like the attitude of somebody before and after having a DVR is so fundamentally different as to be disruptive. I mean, it took me a while to go like, oh, I want to record this and I want to record. And I still kept thinking about it like a VCR,
right.
Like was adding stuff to a playlist. I'm with you, Alex, in that sense. Like it took me a while before I went, okay, instead I'm going to throw a lot of opinions about what I like and things I want you to watch for me and wish lists and catch this and catch that and then sit back and let it do its work. But that is a very different behavior from Chris's, like, I want to watch Peter Pan now. or whatever. But I think that change will come. It's just going to take time and more people on things like DVRs.
And a lot of people who have kids and have DVRs just queue up a ton of stuff that's just always
there. Think about BitTorrent. I mean, there are people out there, I understand, who use BitTorrent and they don't seem to mind at all that it takes a certain amount of time. Do you know what I mean? It's like that's a different behavior.
Now that HD DVD is dead, and by the way, that happened officially last night. Toshiba did say we are going to stop manufacturing HD DVD players, and now no one in their right mind can imagine anyway. HD DVD is clearly out of business. Blu-ray, which Apple, by the way, backed. Apple's one of the Blu-ray backers, unlike Microsoft, is now the winner. But we still don't see Blu-ray recorders in Apple equipment. Why, Chris Breen, why is that? What have you ever asked them, where's our Blu-ray?
I have not asked them that, but I think it's exactly
the
reason that we all think is because even though they were backing it, they weren't sure which side to jump on.
Right.
And now they know.
Now we know.
Yeah. But Apple's moved beyond the disc, so forget it.
Yeah, really.
It's all in the air now. You can have air movies.
That's right. It's all on the, it's all air movies now.
The question is really whether Apple will put it. I mean, how long will it take and whether they will delay putting Blu-ray on there specifically to keep on pushing the idea of you can download all those movies instead of using the Blu-ray.
Don't a lot of people like you, though, want a Mac Pro with a Blu-ray burner in it?
Oh, I'd love it.
Yeah,
I mean, just from an archival, being able to put 40 gigs or 50 gigs on one disc I'd actually go back to discs. I mean, right now we don't even consider
that the capacity.
It.
That's the capacity of a Blu-ray disc.
Yeah.
My gosh! Wow.
Yeah, and that's probably the good thing about it, and the good reason that it won was it was more than HD DVD. And I think ultimately, if you had to pick one thing, that's probably what put it over the top. At least certainly from the computer company's point of view. I mean, I think even Microsoft's going to have to put a Blu-ray now in Xbox, or at least offer it with Xbox.
A lot of my friends have been, I've noticed Gruber talking about this on the Twitter. A lot of people are saying, okay, well, now I've been sitting on this, like me, for example. I've been sitting here going, I am so going to wait for this to shake out. I'm not going to buy a Betamax. Mm-hmm. Well, now we know what to buy. A lot of people are saying, I understand that you should just go out and buy a PS3. Do you guys have an opinion on
that? Yes, that's the answer, by the way.
And that's like what, $400?
$400. The cheapest Blu-ray player right now is standalone is about $350. So you're spending $50 more and you get the whole PS3. Plus, it's the best Blu-ray player. It's upgradable. It's got a hard drive. I think everybody agrees. I mean, it's a little noisier than a dedicated DVD player, I guess. But it's probably the best Blu-ray player.
How big is that? What size of a what? Like a box at Yahtzee? Like how big is that?
It looks like a bread box. It's got this curved face to it. It's quite attractive, but because it's curved, it doesn't kind of stack in there with the rest of your stuff. It's Sony clearly designed it to stand out. I would say it's about volume wise no bigger than any other DVD player, except the very smallest ones. But it's no bigger than any other HD DVD player.
But it's not rack mountable.
No.
depends on the kind of rack you
have. If you had a swoopy doopy rack, because it's curved. It's beautiful. I mean, it's well, piano black. I mean, it's gorgeous.
You ever consider that, Alex? Maybe the problem's your rack.
Yeah.
Yes, I never
need
thought
a new rack.
I never thought of that.
So of course, as Apple continues to negotiate with international carriers to bring the iPhone to countries around the world. According to China Mobile, the biggest wireless carrier in China, they're about 500,000, 400,000 cracked iPhones using its network. One out of every 10 iPhone shipments is being used in China.
Now, which is an amazing thing when you think about how much money, because they cost $450 to $600 in China. So, you know, that's an awful lot of disposable income.
That's a, you know, that's a several months wage probably for some of these.
Well, for some, but I mean,
they're also billionaires and they can afford it.
Yeah. In any like developing country, what you have is you know, you go to Zimbabwe and there's, you know, Mercedes-Benz everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, in the capital, you know, and then there's nothing when you get 15 miles out,
right.
You know? And so I think that a lot of the, you know, there is in China, I mean, there's a billion people there. So there's probably, you know, 10 million or 20 million people, which is statistically insignificant, but still enough to buy. They're the ones that want to buy everything that as it comes out.
400,000. And this is coming from a carrier, so they know exactly what phones are on their network.
Right.
It's really interesting. I don't know what happens now as far as Apple moving into China, but I would imagine this is good leverage for them. Shows demand.
Is there any, I don't think there's any technical issue of sending it to China. No, like technology laws or anything else
Interesting question. I mean, we have this horrible balance of trade with China. It'd be kind of nice to have, instead of us buying iPods made by them buying something made by them that we made that we ship back to them.
Never mind. They could just walk it across the street.
never mind.
There's a lot of carbon that's being used to send the iPhones all the way to the United States and then back. You know,
Chris Breen, were you tempted when Rush Limbaugh started going on the air and complaining about his problems with the Macintosh? Were you tempted to call in and say, I can help you, Rush?
Yeah, I was, actually. I said, just, you know, send your computers to me, Rush, and I'll take care of you.
He works for the same company I do, the same syndicator. I was hurt he didn't call me. Although, the things he was complaining about, everybody complains about. Time Machine won't back up email. That's right?
Uh-huh.
And that he didn't like that.
Uh-huh.
And what was the other complaint? I can't remember it, but it was a known difficulty, a known problem.
And he wanted Steve to personally take care of this, right?
Yeah, I could read the transcript, you people, if you want, in Russia's voice. Let me see if I. For those of you watching on the Ditto Cam today, he says I've been pretty animated talking to the broadcast engineer and my trusty aide de camp and chief of staff HR. I didn't want to bring this up. I hadn't thought I was going to bring it up. You know, I'm a big Mac guy. I love Macs. I've got 4 Mac Pros. They're the top of the line Mac Pros maxed out, and I just got a new system upgrade. Went to Leopard. It was a big, big update. I've been having 2 problems since I went to Leopard. I hope this update would solve. He's talking about 10.5.2, and it didn't solve them, and it's frustrating. This is on the air. When normally he's talking about politics. I'm telling these guys, I've worked patiently. I've been very patient with my Apple rep. Do you have an Apple rep? With my Apple rep? With my developer rep? He's got 2 reps. And they're working hard on it, but nothing gets done. All use file reports and get lost in the Apple bureaucratic system. He says they're having the same problem at Apple that I'm having here. So I'm asking these guys during the break, do you think I ought to put out a plea to Steve Jobs? I know he's politically opposite of me. But just to say, Mr. Jobs, please, I ordered 6 brand new Mac Pros, 4 for me, 2 as gifts, maxed out, Blu-ray drives. Can you order Blu-ray drives?
No.
See?
Rush.
He's got a rep. He's got a rep. His rep set him up with a Blu-ray.
He's not paying for this stuff. I loaded them up. Our whole office here is Mac. I just want it to work because I love them.
I'm experiencing what psychologists call cognitive dizziness right now.
It's a little weird.
It's very off-putting. Well,
Rush is a snob. I guess he's got white teeth, but he's certainly not green.
And like me, he has pain management issues. So
yes, he does, as we know.
Yeah, I think the whole Blu-ray thing was a side effect.
Yeah, maybe. He's hallucinating that he's got Blu-ray.
Also,
drives.
There are several large elves that are standing on my head.
So I guess I'm still trying to find out what the problem is. He goes, this guy, boy, is he bloviate. No. I mean, like 8 paragraphs
down. I'll bet he gets something out of it, don't you think? If you're a product.
That's the news story. Apple called. Rush Limbaugh says, this is a transcript from the show yesterday. I have an announcement to make. Apple corporate called. Somebody high up on the corporate ladder at Apple, out in Cupertino, called the office. Jeez. All right, they called me at 9 o'clock this morning. Very, very, very nice guy. I put my IT guy in touch with them. Working. No, it was not Al Gore. Ha! No, Mr. Sternly was not Al Gore. Anyway, so... So the IT's guy's working with him. Now, the only one I knew about was Time Machine not backing up the email. I can't find the other one because he goes on and on and on and on and on.
That's interesting.
So the person at Apple Corporate, I mean, what is this, like Lost at Liar's Dice, or, you know, who ended up with that
who
gig?
Gets to call Rush? It was one of, it's one of those nice ladies that calls you and me, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
They're very sweet. I think they're just out of college.
And their name ends in an I.
Yep. Hi, this is Brandy with Apple.
Brandi.
And we hear you've been having trouble. Oh, I know. The other one is you couldn't get back to my Mac working.
That's, oh, surprise.
Yeah. Join the club, Rush.
That's so strange. That's bulletproof. That is very hard
never
to believe.
Never such a thing.
Huh. That's weird.
He says, I can do it without back to my Mac, but I can't, which is true. You can use VNC or a lot of other stuff, but I can't do it with back to my Mac.
I think this is a really interesting, though, because, I mean, gosh, you have to imagine that he is a really busy guy. I mean, and yet, obviously, he's a nerd. Like, he's spent a lot of time with this stuff.
Nerd,
I mean,
yeah.
How many people do you know that, like, are sitting around talking about, like, kind of weird, not obvious features of Leopard?
I don't think there's one member of Congress that could say, oh, yeah, Time Machine doesn't back up email.
Lawrence Lessig, if he makes it. Get Larry Lessig in there. He'll know.
Yeah, are you part of the draft, Larry, to take Lantos?
I don't know. I don't even know. Where does he live? I don't even know. Is he in Washington? Is that where he lives?
Larry Lessig?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. He lives in Palo Alto. He's at Stanford.
Oh, that's right. He's still at Stanford. That's right.
No, he's in the district. He was in Lantos's district. He actually could do it. I doubt he would want to.
I don't know why. Yeah. I wonder what one really, really smart guy can do in Congress. That's...
Actually, the story of the there's a little twit.
I'm afraid it would damage it. That's the problem. I think that the radiation.
No, I think it'd be great to get somebody with Larry's intelligence in there, at least talking to these guys, saying, look, here's the issues, particularly with copyright. But the job would just be till November. Then you have to go through another election, a general election in November. And I don't think Larry would be that interested in it. However, the call, the draft, Larry, began on This Week in Law, which we're going to put up in another couple of days. John Palfrey, who's one of the attorneys on that show, actually started the forum and got the ball rolling. So the show hasn't aired yet, so I don't know if I can take any credit for it. But anyway, you can hear it. You can hear it here last a little later on this week. We'll put the show.
I think you just scooped yourself.
I scooped myself in a strange accident involving a time machine and a contraceptive. I am now here to tell you I am my child's brother. Let's see. What else?
Rush like Limbaugh. Being in Georgia.
Rush Limbaugh got a call from. Do you think Steve called him?
No.
I think if I were Steve, I'd be tempted. You know, I mean, Limbaugh's got more clout than Walt Mossberg when it comes to selling Macs. If Rush Limbaugh says go out and buy a Mac,
selling Macs to a there's definitely a cross section there that they're not reaching, that Apple's not reaching.
Absolutely, it'd be very good for them. I mean, if I'm Apple, I cultivate Rush Limbaugh like crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, how well do Macs run off a turpentine generator?
I knew somebody was going to do it. Chris Breen, ladies and gentlemen, he's the Prius driving green nudnik with white teeth and sneakers.
Snob.
The snob. You can write.
Oh, and also, we're all liberals, too. That was part of the thing.
Was it? We're all politically left?
That's true.
Yeah. I think that is true. That's why this whole thing with Rush Limbaugh is so puzzling.
I got to say, though, I am not what you'd call a Rush Limbaugh fan, but I think that's pretty cool. I always like hearing somebody who's gotten engaged with the Mac, you know, who's like gotten past the switch part and now they're tinkering. And I mean, I hate to sound condescending. He might have been doing this for years.
No, he's been a Mac guy for a long time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, I don't listen to his show, but I think that's pretty cool that he's a Mac guy. I think that's all right.
I think more than that, I think he's a geek. Let's do our Audible pick of the week, and then we'll do your software and hardware picks. By the way, I should mention that Scott Bourne couldn't join us today. He had a conflicting appointment, and Andy called us. We were really hoping to get him on. He couldn't be in the Dunce Cap Studios today. He was in the field, but that was the problem. I don't think he had a very good connection, and I had to boot him. So, and he's sad about it, and we're sad about it, but he'll be back next week, I'm sure. But we couldn't get either of them on. And normally Andy does all of the picks, the Audible picks. But I'm going to do one today because it's a guy I'm.
He's the only one who's into books.
Yeah, he's the only actual reader in the bunch. No, come on.
I have to say that since we started doing this Audible thing, that I find my, you know, I started, you kind of opened up this little crack, and now I'm downloading books all the time.
Yeah, book reading is great.
Yeah, I mean,
I've been listening. I mentioned this on a different show, but I've been reading this new Steve Martin book. Standing Up, which is a memoir. He reads it. It's really, really, I cannot recommend it more highly. But that's not my recommendation of the week. I'm actually going to recommend a book that is a Silicon Valley thriller. There is such a thing. Mac Richtel is a New York Times writer. He writes often about technology obsession, how technology impacts our lives. And he has written a book called Hooked, a thriller about love and other addictions that takes place in Silicon Valley. And it involves venture capitalists and bombs going off. And it's actually quite dramatic and I'm really enjoying it. Quite a good book. Highly recommend it. It's called Hooked, a thriller about love and other addictions. And I like the tech angle on it. I think it's just a matter of time before we hear more and more of these books kind of taking advantage of the passions of Silicon Valley. Now, here's the deal on this. Audible is a place where you can download books read by the best people in the world. And this is really important. You can, you know, you go to the bookstore and you can buy the books, and they're often read by the author. And sometimes authors are good, but sometimes not so good. When Steve Martin reads, that's fine. Some of these guys shouldn't be reading. And frankly, they're often highly abridged. This is not that experience. These are most of them unabridged. They do have some abridged. In fact, in this case, Hooked, you have abridged and unabridged, so you can choose depending on your time. But you have the choice of unabridged, read by professional actors who really bring the books to life. I mean, it makes a big difference. It's really, that was a big thing for me when I discovered Audible. Plus, you get them right away. I mean, books are not as big as high-def video. So if your daughter wants to hear a children's book, you can download it in a matter of seconds. Here's what you do. Get a free book by going to audible.com/MacBreak. And it could be Hooked or any of the 45,000 other books. You could play it on any iPod or iPhone or a lot of other devices, hundreds of different devices. And I think you're going to love it. Just try one. That's all. Just try one and you'll get hooked just as Mr. Alex Lindsay has. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. It is now time, my friends, to do our picks of the week, software picks. We haven't done a wine in a while. Should we bring back wines? Not now. Oh. Well, we could do it now if you have wines.
Oh, I always got wines. I would love to bring back wines.
Merlin's always really the one who wanted to wine.
I like to wine.
It's a core competency, Leo. It's something that I really spend a lot of time. I as a Mac user and snob and people who makes fun of everyone who's not like me, a lot of what I do, is whining based.
Well, let's do a pick and a pan, an optional pan. So if you have a pick, great. But if you have a pan, you can do both. Do you want to start, Merlin?
Wow.
Are you still trying to remember your pick?
I think I remember my pick, and here's the problem. I have this tendency. You'll notice that I think I don't listen to the show that much after we've taped it, but my sense is that I frequently begin my pick by saying, have we done Foo yet?
Yeah, we all do that.
Did we last week, did somebody do ScreenFlow yet?
Oh, that's mine for this week.
Oh!
You can both do it.
We should both do it because do you want to start or do you want me to?
I did about 2 hours of captures over the weekend with ScreenFlow.
You got to tell people what it is.
Okay, so ScreenFlow it's in the family of screen capture utilities. So, but then it goes way further. So you have iShowYou, which is about $20 and is really good. I mean, it captures quickly and it's inexpensive and you have the movie done as soon as you finish capturing, which is great. Then you have Snaps, which is the diehard. I mean, that's when we know we need to make sure that we capture it. Generally, we're using Snaps still. And then you have this new ScreenFlow, and this is by Vera Software. They do
Firecast
and so on and so forth. Yeah, but this is, I mean, it's at a whole different level. So just interrupt me wherever you want, Merlin, but
the only opener I would make is to say, like, I would begin by just saying Vera Software, like, for what it's worth, if you're doing anything that involves podcasting and demonstrations on a Mac, you need to be using one of their products. Wirecast lets you basically broadcast things using your Mac and a camera. VideoQ Pro, which I learned about from, I think it was Callie Lewis, lets you do like a one-person podcast with a script. It's awesome. And this, I mean, I don't want to steal the lead here, but it makes it really easy for you to capture both video and a screen capture at the same time, which previously took a ridiculous amount of like training and equipment to do. That's the only thing.
And the other thing that I haven't actually even used that feature yet, and I'm excited about it, which is that, you know, when you capture it, you sit there and you set up the capture and you capture it. It's pretty much like any other capture program. Then you go back to work. You know, it says, okay, here we go.
Just clarify, it's two tracks. I mean, just so people get the idea, you're sitting there, like in my case, I'm sitting there with my MacBook Pro. The camera's pointed at my stupid face and I'm doing something on my Mac. I don't have to do anything special. I can plug in a DV camera, but I don't have to. All I do is start talking and using something on my Mac, and it's capturing this on two different tracks, just like in GarageBand.
That's right. Kind of neat. So, and can you then, after the fact, cut back and forth?
Well, here's the thing: is that Merlin, can you answer that question? I actually
yeah. I mean,
how
what
do you
it
get
does
your is, video into it? Is it an inset?
Or it's you get you can do it however you want. You have complete control through a timeline. It's a little bit wonky, but if you ever use stuff back in the day, like what was that Adobe video program I used to
Premiere.
Use?
Premiere.
It's a lot. I found it a little bit like using Premiere, where you can select areas.
Oh, I see. Say this part, like, show me. This part, show the screen.
I'm still getting the hang of resizing video and stuff, but it's transitions. But it's like super lightweight iMovie.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is that it is keeping track of, and I don't know what it's doing to do this, but it's keeping track of both the icon as well as knowing what the front window is. And so what I was doing is I was doing some technical training for one of our applications, Conduit. And so what I want to do is I want to have the dialog box that I'm talking about zoom up and everything else goes dark. And all I got to do is say, add what they call a call out and say what how long the transition should be. And that window just pops right up. It just zooms up to the, you know, whatever, 200x or whatever, and you can see me working on it. And then when I wanted to zoom back, it just pops back in and it goes back into the thing. And I have to admit, I started with like one call out here and there, and now I have it calling out to the front window and then calling out to some of the arrows and calling out, and you know, and it also keeps track of, and I haven't tried this yet, but it's supposed to keep track of all your keystrokes. So you can have your keystrokes visible while you're doing it, which is a big problem when you're doing training. So
how does
it
show that? Does it show it at the bottom of the screen?
I haven't actually turned it on. I just saw the buttons there and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's doing
that. What if it like throws up a HUD or something? Like,
wouldn't that be cool? Like, see, that's something people have asked us for when we did our Photoshop things.
When we did the Quicksilver episodes of the Merlin show, like we had to sit up. Alex knows. I had an area in his office set up. We had to sit there. You got to set up a camera. You got to make sure. And I mean, as awesome as iShowU is, it's the program for capturing screen stuff up till now. It's like you have to be very specific about make sure you get the aspect ratios to match. I mean, for a lot of you out there, this is not going to make any sense at all. But if you're doing anything with demonstrations, you know what a huge pain in the ass this stuff is. And the callouts alone, like you basically select an area and say, do this call out here. Basically make a little circle of the size that I choose around the cursor, make everything black out, zoom in 300%, and now stop doing it. And now make my face go here instead of there.
The great thing about this is also if you're doing half res, because a lot of times we're capturing the screen at full res, and we want to go back down to half res, that call out for that dialog box makes it still readable. You know, but you don't give up the whole screen when you're trying to show the overall view of what's going on. Really.
Oh, sounds like
I have a workflow question, because I know that's what you specialize at. Now that I'm, you know, this is quarter one, so for me, it's all about building capacity. My thing is, like, if I export that or if I save that file and I send that to somebody like, say, let's say Ben or Darren as a file, can they then go in and do the magic?
Yeah. Here's the thing. This is the one shortfall, I think, right now of their version. And I sent them this laundry list of changes I want, inside of the fact that it's the best thing I've ever used to do this. But here are a whole bunch of changes that I'd love to see. And one of them was that they need to have an animation out, you know, setting, because right now it's really designed that you're going to capture and then you're going to send it out to H.264 for the web or for compressed footage. But the problem is, if you're a professional doing a lot of these screen captures, you don't want to do that, because you want a pristine version of whatever you captured that you can recompress over time.
Like,
you
know, export both tracks, for example, would be good.
Well,
separately.
I don't worry about that. I just worry about making sure that when it's finished, there's a clean version that I'm going to use as the basis of my compression to go out to whatever else I want to do. I don't want to have it mash it down to H.264 and then wish later, oh, I really wish I had a higher quality version to go back to. And so... So I tend to want to have it. I want that pristine version. I can throw all of my captures into a compressor later if I want to do that. But it's going to be much easier to use in an editor if I get it as in an uncompressed form, if I want to do more work with it and so on and so forth. And so I don't think that I'm not that excited about the way the export works. But I just switch it back to animation and then export it, and then I do a little bit of work on the sound. Typically, I equalize and compress the sound in Soundtrack or whatever. And I'd love to have those tools inside of this program. You never thought of that in the screen capture program until they started putting editors and stuff in it. But now you're like, well, I really want to do all the stuff there. I don't want to bother to go out to Soundtrack.
But I mean, for consumer to prosumer, what I'm imagining is like, you're somebody who's like totally overwhelmed with having to do training, let's say in a small office. Mm-hmm. And like, you sit down at your computer, let's say you've got a MacBook Pro or an iMac with a camera. You basically turn this thing on and act like you're showing it to somebody that you like and then send it out. And it's, you know, I agree. I think
I've already screwed stuff up where I've coughed or really badly, or I've screwed something up or need to do it. And you can edit all of that right in the capture before you export. You know, so it
has some decent audio editing as well. It sounds really like a great program.
It doesn't have a lot of audio editing yet. It's you can just snip it. You know, right. So what I did is I just wanted to cut out some areas that I needed to cut out. And that's a fairly straightforward process.
If I record room tone, could I overlay it or paste it in?
Not yet.
So you'll hear disappear. Yeah.
That's on the list.
That sounds great. I mean, this is the first company. Vera's really been doing some great stuff. This is Vera Soft.
Incredible. And as I said, it's the best solution. I think that hopefully this is going to push the other folks to develop something in sooner than later. Yeah, it's Verisoft.com, I think.
I think it's $99. $99, which is a good deal, although they have a free trial download, so you can see how it works for you. There are a lot of people doing screencasts. I think there'll be a lot more doing screencasts when this comes out.
And it's a much more, especially if you start using those call-outs, it becomes a much more interactive video. The problem with screencasts is they are so freaking boring, you know, and so being able to have your video in there when you want to talk to people and say something that the mouse doesn't require, or being able to pop screens up and down, just that change in interaction, I think is going to make a huge difference in people's both comprehension and ability to watch long periods of it.
Exciting. Yeah, because you don't want to sit and watch screen. You want to see a person once in a while.
We tried to do this. We did this on the very first product. We actually animated everything in After Effects to get this effect. And when I looked at this, I was like...
They're good. And $99 is remarkable. I mean, that's a remarkable price for this.
It's a huge jump in because it's not just a screen capture program. It's a it's doing a lot more than that.
Well, I didn't want to do screencasts. But now that you talk about it, it sounds like it's something I could even use because I'm talking, but every once in a while I want to show a website or a screen or something, and it's a way of breaking it up.
Good.
Yeah, I'll definitely try it. I've started to do videos of the sermonettes I do at the beginning of each radio show, and I think that'd be very useful to break up the looking at me, and I could show some sites and stuff as I've talked about them.
Yeah.
Chris Breen, did you have a wine, Merlin, a pan you would like to throw in there?
God, I always have so many.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, this hold that for next week.
Next week. Yeah.
Next week, bring your wines, ladies and gentlemen. I'll bring the cheese. Chris Breen, your pick.
Yes. My pick is really expensive. And mostly I'm offering it because I'm bragging that I have it. And
if it's a MacBook Air, you're out.
No, it's not. It's actually a Nikon D300.
Oh, you got one.
I got one. I love this camera.
Now, is it a review, or did you actually buy it?
I bought it. It was my birthday recently. Somebody sent me a nice check for my birthday, and I said, I could, you know, fix the stairs, or I can buy myself something totally extravagant, a camera so much better than my abilities, and I did. I was moving from a Nikon D70, so I'm a Nikon shooter. I've got a few Nikon lenses, and... I've been feeling a little embarrassed about being a Nikon shooter because, you know, all my friends are Canon shooters and they're going, oh, but yeah, but you don't have this, you don't have this, you know, this. And now I've got this camera and it shoots fast.
We're all jealous of you.
I hope so.
Have you turned up the high ISO?
I have. Yeah, I've been doing some low light shooting with this thing. And, you know, I moved from my D70 where I just got this really noisy, ugly looking stuff. And I shoot this with a D300 now and it's gorgeous.
What's the top ISO on this?
Oh, you can go to, you know, forever on this thing.
3200.
I think 6400 is, 6400? I believe, the top end.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But even if you're...
And the 6400 is like my 1600 on my Canon.
Really?
I mean, it's really, really... I mean, we've been talking on this weekend photography. There's the D300, D3 versus all of this other stuff has been a big piece of discussion.
Now, the D3 is full frame. This is not full frame.
It's not. It's a smaller chip, but it's kind of taking the same approach as less pixels and a lot more sensitivity. And so what you're getting is these really high ISOs that are usable. I mean, if you look at some of the images on the web, it's profound.
And it's a huge jump from my D70, which I thought,
I love my D7.
You know what? Yeah, it was at the time, it was like more camera than I could use. And then I got sort of the limits of it where I realized this thing isn't fast enough for me. The low light shooting is not good. So it was time to make that jump again and say, okay, I have to get a lot smarter and spend a lot more time with this camera. And I haven't taken some really exceptional shots with it yet because I'm still learning the camera. But it's conceivable that I can. I like the way the controls are laid out. It's very simple to get to the main functions I need to get to. Again, low light shooting is great. I've got a Speedlight 600, so I can use that in remote, and I'm starting to play around with that as well. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful camera.
I have to admit, I've been looking at the D300 and the D3, and I think that unless Canon does something pretty exciting over the next, 3 to 6 months, I think the D3 might be my next. You know,
I saw you say something about that. You might move because you have all these Canon lenses, don't you?
I don't have a ton of Canon lenses. Here's the worst part: I had a ton of Nikon lenses.
Yeah.
And I went to Canon. I have to admit that I was still dipping my toe in, and I have a handful of lenses, but I didn't go. I had $6,000 of glass for my Nikon, and I didn't go back to that because I was like, well, I'm going to see what I think. And I was just getting ready to buy glass, and then I started seeing images out of the D. The D3 goes to 25,600 ISO.
Jeez.
And it is usable. I mean, usable at that. You know, we're talking just an enormous amount of sensitivity. And now I have to admit, I'm just waiting to see if Canon's going to do something. And we've been talking, I think we talk about it almost every week on TWIP. And it's just this, they've made a huge, I mean, Nikon has made a huge leap with the D300 and the D3 in front of Canon, as far as I'm concerned, because the sensitivity is at this point is so much more important than megapixels and, you know, a lot of the other stuff, because now it means that you can shoot indoor, you can shoot your kids or shoot a sporting event, and you can have it fast enough. I mean, it's a really amazing. Both those cameras are just amazing.
What lens are you using, Chris?
I'm using an 18-200, mm-hmm. which is kind of the perfect walk-around lens. So you can do wide, you can do telephoto.
Yeah, so 1.6 multiplier. So you get this 24-300, really, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great. And it's a small, compact lens. So it's, when you extend it, it looks bizarre. But
and what's the aperture? What's the widest aperture?
Oh, in a second.
Like 4.5?
If you want to go to Flickr and look at it, I love the camera finder in Flickr because you can see what images people are getting with various cameras. And it's flickr.com/cameras/Nikon. And you can see all the Nikons. And if you do /D300, you can see all the, there's about 6,000 D300 images.
Yeah,
there.
It's 3.5, Alex.
Yeah, so, and that's where that fast ISO is going to make a big difference, because that's like having a lens. I mean, it's not the same depth of field, but it's like having the same sensitivity as like a 1.4.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the night shots people have been getting with this, and they're spectacular. They're just spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine who went on a shoot with, I think it was actually the D3, and he said that, but he said shooting, he was shooting stuff that he couldn't see. And he said it was the closest thing to, you know, magic he had ever, played. They've made a huge jump. Canon has to react, and they have to react quickly, because this is these two cameras are the most advanced, SLR cameras in existence right now.
And it's about $1,800 for the body, and then you'll have to buy a lens to go with it. So it isn't, you're right, Chris, it's two or three Alexes here we're talking.
It's a jump if you're sort of the amateur middling photographer like me, but it really is an understandable camera. You know, you don't, even if you're just sort of a moderate shooter, you're not going to pick this thing up and go, what? Oh, boy, did I make a mistake here. If you're moving from point and shoot, yeah, it's going to be a problem. But moving for something like the D40 or D70, no problem.
A lot of people are raving over this camera. I mean, I hear a lot of good things about it. All right, well, I have to make up for you guys. I got something free. How about that?
Ooh.
Free, free, free. And it's, again, like you, Merlin, I'm thinking we must have talked about this at some time. And we probably have, but I don't know if we've recommended it. We're such big Quicksilver lovers. We probably haven't mentioned Butler, which... Mm. Predated Quicksilver. It's Peter Maurer wrote it. It's now, I think somebody's taken it over from him. It's now at manytricks.com. Still free, though, although they say if you want to donate, you're welcome to. And it is basically like Quicksilver in the same sense. You press control space and type the first few letters. Has a lot of nice features, though, and including a menu bar modification, so you can put a Google search or any search tool in your menu bar. You can also put bookmarks in your menu bar, which put them right where you want them. You can scan your volumes and your applications and your system preferences and your music right through the menu bar, which is great. Also, it keeps multiple clipboards. And I think sometimes Quicksilver is a little opaque. It's a little hard to figure out how to do what you want to do or what it can even do.
You think?
Which is good for Merlin.
No, you're totally right. It's completely opaque.
But they've done a nice job in Butler of when you go to the configuration window, it actually explains what everything is and says, you know, this is what you would change to do this. It's probably similarly opaque, but I think maybe a little bit more easy to use. And
it's very friendly. It's very friendly looking. And it's, I mean, the thing is, you know, everybody's always wanting to like make these into competitions, which to me is useless. It's like choosing what kind of silverware you're going to buy. I mean, as long as you can eat your food with it, like who cares?
Right.
But it's very well done. By the way, Minitrix, I believe that's Peter's company. That's
Okay. So he's still doing it. Yeah. Good.
No, it's
good,
a terrific app. I mean, God, if
he's one of the best Mac programmers out there. I mean, he's just really Peter
Moore. I mean, if you're in a situation where like you get to choose between Quicksilver or Launch Bar and Butler, like you have the right kind of problem.
Right.
They're all fantastic.
We have mentioned another Peter Moore program. I think probably not on Mac Break Weekly, but on Mac Break called Witch. And I know you use that WITCH, which allows you to Alt tilde through Windows in the same way you Alt tab through applications, and that's really handy to have. The only reason I tried Butler is because, you know, I have this Air and I thought, well, maybe I should try Launch Bar again. And I paid for Launch Bar, so I still have a license to it. And Butler again and compare them to a Quicksilver. And I really like Butler. I think it really does a nice job. I'm using it on the Air and actually I liked it so much. I thought, you know, I might try it on the MacBook, too. So it is the only issue is on a laptop, you need a lot of menu real estate. If you're going to use all the little menu doohickeys, you might find that. With a limited menu bar on a laptop, you don't have enough space. But on a 30-inch display, plenty of space for all those doohickeys. Butler, B-U-T-L-E-R. It's from manytricks.com. And it is free. And I'm glad Peter's still developing it because it works well with the Leopard. I haven't tried Witch with Leopard. I don't know if it still works or not. I would imagine it does. He keeps his stuff up to date. Okay, gentlemen. Anything else to add? Any burning issues, pressing issues? I
just like to remind our listeners, I saw something come up on the net that I think is important as people look at the EULA, you know, within their iTunes and QuickTime. But if they go down to number 10, there's a thing in export control, and I just want to remind them that according to Apple, you also agree that you will not use these products for any purposes prohibited by the United States law, including without limitation the development, design, manufacture, or production of missiles or nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons.
Right on. Daddy O, but automatic weapons, no problem.
This is why I'm switching to Ubuntu. I want to be on a platform where I can put okay, my Lily Allen song on a missile. And if I can't do that, you know,
free as in free beer, free missiles, liberty.
I just thought that was.
I always thought the Second Amendment should be extended not only for the right to bear arms, but the right to bear technology. That
yes,
in the long run, if we ever get a repressive government that tries to shut us down, it ain't going to be a gun that we're going to fight them with.
You can have my episode of Monk when you peel it from my cold.
On that note, another Mac Break is broke.